Hope the Easter Bunny was good to everybody. Certainly good to me. This morning, first of all, Susie, we'll call on you to be over the, we're going to do the OLCC budget, and we are in work session.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the OLCC budget is back before you. Co-chairs are requesting that you reconsider your action in approving a policy package 103, the Retail System Modernization Project with the amendments that you made, and are requesting that you deny this package and insert a budget note that directs the agency to present the package to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information, Management, and Technology for approval, and request the expenditure limitation from the emergency board once they've gotten approval from JLC-IMT in the interim. And the budget note is before you. The second thing that I ask is that you make a technical adjustment to move the $60,000 reduction that we made in the support services program to the regulatory program so that the agency can do its accounting properly. And then if you approve these changes, in your memo before you are the changes in the appropriation bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hannan.
Madam Chair, I'd also like to read into, or at least have for the record, that it is the intent of the Ways and Means Subcommittee and the legislature that these funds accrue to the OLCC for this specific purpose, an increase for this point of purchase equipment. And there was some concern on the part of the commission that the money, if it was increased, might accrue to the general fund, and it was stipulated that it would accrue to the commission so that they could go ahead and purchase their equipment upon e-board approval.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. So that I need to clarify two points. That policy option package included a 3-cent portion and a 1-cent portion. The 3-cent was for, in fact, the policy or the point-of-sale purchase machinery and equipment, which would be made available to the agencies, the agents themselves, I should say, the agents themselves. The other 1 cent was a an amount to be funded to be utilized to assist in some sort of I'm going to call it an allocation or an adjustment, a basis adjustment for agents in anticipation of some kind of a increase. And I do want to number one express my appreciation and my concern for agents that they are being compensated appropriately. And I know that Alex and the OLCC has been doing a great job in making sure that the combination of all funds received have been dedicated to making sure that the agents are compensated for the work that they do as agents in selling distilled spirits. I also want to make sure that nothing in the work that we have done should be reflective of any particular company one over another. No one should believe that as a result of any of the comments that are made, Seagram's versus Hood River versus any other company should be taken to task here. I think that all of those companies have been supportive of the agents, and all of them are supportive of the agents receiving the compensation. That having been said, I would like to know about the 1 versus the 3 cents in this process, recognizing that just the 3 cents was set aside for grants to agents under the point of sale when it had been approved.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, in this package, it reverts back to the agency's proposal that the 4 cents be dedicated to this package, that there be no differential between a 3 cent and a 1 cent, so that it takes away the 1 cent dedication to an agent's compensation package. That's not to say that the Liquor Control Commission should not assess the agent's compensation and take a look at whether they are providing an equitable arrangement on the base, and come back with a proposal out of their normal revenue stream, but it does not allocate any part of this package to that process.
And what of the study?
There's no budget note directing the study, but that doesn't mean that the agent, because OLCC is concerned about whether their base is adequate or not, that they can't go ahead and do that. That's their prerogative.
And finally, if the 4 cents is allocated for the point of sale, how are we assured of its appropriate distribution to the agents who can best utilize that point of sale, on which will integrate onto a single platform the eventual proceeds used or derived from the 4 cents?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's why it is coming back to the Joint Legislative Information Management Technology Committee and the Emergency Board to provide those details so that you can ensure that that is going to happen. The agency has presented a package that shows how they would distribute it. The questions that the subcommittee brought up about whether that's the most effective and efficient way to do that are still not resolved, and that is why we want the Information Management Technology Committee to take a look at that and get a better, get more detail on it.
Madam Chair, question of the co-chair. Co-chair Hannon, is there a possibility that the Joint Legislative Information Management Technology Committee could empower of its own motion an independent study of agents' compensation to look at the potential of a base adjustment, and that independent study would be independent of the agency itself?
Probably not. That Joint Legislative Information Management is technology. It's not policy oriented, and it would probably have to originate out of the U board.
Could it give any direction in that regard? It probably wouldn't be appropriate coming from that technology.
That would have to be a request of the U board, and would have to be approved in the U board subcommittee with a full U board endorsement.
Madam Chair, it's the desires of the desire of the co-chairs that we pull back the bifurcation of policy option package 103 between the 1 cent and the 3 cent, and that the full 4 cent per bottle be allowed to be utilized for the point of sale information based upon an allocation or based upon approval and distribution through the OLCC approval from the Joint Legislative Information Committee on Information Management Technology. And I still express my concern that I would like to have seen the study, that there could be some basis adjustment, and I hope that the OLCC and the leadership of OLCC would bring forward an opportunity for an independent study. And again, I think that we've heard a lot of support for some examination of the basis of the independent agents or the agents' study, that it be an independent study. But in accordance with the request and wishes of the co-chair, I would move that we accept the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Office relative to Package 103.
Thank you, Representative Butler, and I think the fact that we would like to see an independent study will be taken note by this agency, and hopefully an e-board report could be made at some time during the next biennium for that kind of study to be given to us. Any discussion of the motion by Representative Butler to accept the LFO recommendation on this budget? Any further discussion? Any objection? If not, so ordered.
Do you want me to read the dollars
Yes.
into the record then? you're approving the budget bill, House Bill 5027, in the amount of $77,148,773.217.02 FTE. The amendments are in Section 1, Line 10, to delete $31,897,135 and insert $32,593,023. In Line 11, delete $45,841,760 and insert $44,356,760. And in Line 12, delete $201,000 and insert $198,990.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5027 as amended to the full.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 5027 as amended to the full. With a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Okay.
The carriers are the same. Representative Butler in the full and House, and I will carry in the Senate. And I would just say before we leave this budget that I would like Representative Butler to work with the Director of the Commission during the next coming biennium for an independent study. I appreciate it if you'll do that, and maybe most of this committee will be back next session and we'll hear your
report. I will take that charge, Madam.
Thank you, Representative Butler. The work session on 5027 and open a public hearing on 5507, the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Okay, you're going to see if you remember this discussion about it. First of all, this morning, good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Are you feeling much better today?
I am. Good. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, you sound a lot better.
Thank you.
See, we're going to continue with the Workers' Compensation Division and Budget presentation.
Thank you.
Good morning, Debbie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Very briefly, Robin is handing out some answers to a couple of questions that the committee raised on Thursday about the history of occupational injury and illness coding, as well as the classification of hernias. And I'll just point that out to you, and
okay.
Unless there are questions, we can continue with John Schultz's presentation of the Workers' Comp Division budget.
Let the committee have a second to read these answers, and we'll see if you have any questions.
Madam Chair?
Thank you. Representative Hayden.
I've glanced at the definition, and I'm not persuaded. What this says is that hernias are pre-existing conditions. They have congenital defects. It still doesn't sound like a disease to me, but who am I to argue with the federal government? Madam Chair, when we purchase private insurance, third-party insurance, indemnity insurance, pre-existing conditions are excluded. Apparently, that's not the case in any health system.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that's one of the premier issues around workers' comp, how pre-existing conditions fit into the whole system. And as John talked about on Thursday, the major contributing cause study addressed pre-existing conditions to some extent, and the case in the Supreme Court right now is addressing the whole pre-existing condition issue. So you've hit on exactly one of the major issues around workers' compensation. The classification piece, in terms of injuries versus illnesses, is a little bit different system. Workers' compensation is a state-by-state issue, and each state determines the policies around that. This particular classification system, as you pointed out, is a federal government system that revolves around federal OSHA and the different OSHA plans in the states. So they are a little bit different system and don't always work together real smoothly.
That helps. Yep. Any other questions regarding the agency's response to our questions? If not, let's go ahead and proceed then.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, and I'll be speaking from page 44 in your binder. That's behind the Workers' Compensation Division tab, and it's about the third page in behind that tab. And I believe where we left off, we had just finished talking about the 1999-2001 budget note, which created the major contributing cause study. And so I'll be moving on to talk about option package number 131, information technology support. This option package would add two information system specialist positions, to provide information technology support to the Workers' Compensation Division. Approval of this package will improve electronic access to information and services for the workers' compensation community. And I want to emphasize that we are recommending this option package in response to strong requests from the workers' compensation community. This package will help eventually reduce workers' compensation system costs and improve services through the development of mail management systems and the implementation of three electronic data interchange projects with insurance companies, which consist of proof of insurance coverage online, medical reporting online, and claims reporting online. This would also, the addition of these two positions would help us to improve our customer service by reducing project backlog of enhancements to the Workers' Compensation Division information system. Currently, there is, I believe, 54 projects backlogged in the Workers' Compensation Division, and the addition of these two positions, along with allowing us to commence our electronic data interchange projects, would put us in a position to catch up on this backlog. It would also allow our staff to make better decisions because it will allow us to create a WCD data warehouse and allow staff access to that. For the stakeholders in the system, it should help them reduce the amount of time that they are required to process claims through internet availability of workers' compensation data. And an example of that would be a worker who first arrives at a physician's office who wants to file a workers' compensation claim. Today, the physician may get information from the worker about who their insurance carrier is. The worker may or may not know. Oftentimes, they don't. The physician has to get on the telephone, perhaps try to call somebody at work. They might call the division. It could take them a couple of times calling. It's not unusual for a workers' compensation claim to be filed with the wrong insurer. In fact, it's not unusual at all for that to happen. What we would like to do is to put this information online so the physician's office would just go onto the internet and look up who is the carrier, and they've got the information immediately available to them. This would also help us to improve consumer information through continued expansion of our website. I talked about that last week, that we have an expanding website. The electronic, just a word or two about what we expect to gain from the electronic data interchange projects. And again, there's three of them that we're talking about, and that is basically proof of coverage reporting, first and subsequent report of injury reporting, and medical reporting. We do expect to have significant cost savings and efficiencies, and frankly, that's the principal reason to support an electronic data interchange project, is to gain cost efficiencies for the system. This will eliminate data entry, and savings will be available due to reduced filing requirements and reduction of expenditures in such things as postage and mail sorting and delivery time. It eliminates duplicative entry processes and the efficiencies associated with a single standardized way to enter workers' compensation data. Every time you have to re-enter data, you multiply the times that errors can be made. Improved data accuracy will reduce the amount of times that data can be entered in error. There's little value in collecting and utilizing data unless you've got a pretty good idea that the data is accurate. And every time you enter data, the more chance you have to make a mistake. The electronic submission of data on claims, coverage, and medical costs will permit us to make comparisons of experience at different points of time across states. And this will afford us the opportunity to identify systemic problems as we compare ourselves with other states. And perhaps most importantly to our multi-state insurers, and almost every insurer here in Oregon that's a workers' compensation insurer is a multiple state insurer, except one, is that this will culminate in the creation of a comprehensive database at the state level that's standardized with other states. We are working with the International Association of Industrial Accident Commissions and Boards to create a national standard for electronic data interchange. We're just one state of many that's involved in that. This will assist insurance companies in that they will just have one standard to meet in terms of filing electronic data instead of 50. And that's a significant help to insurers. I do want to mention that we did present in front of the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government last week on this option package, and were given an endorsement by the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government. There's also a budget note that Ms. Lamont has, which will require us to report back prior to commencement of the 72nd Legislative Assembly on our progress in regard to electronic data interchange, process improvement, and e-government for this Workers' Compensation Division Information Technology Support Option Package. The last thing I want to mention is that it is our plan to actually house these two positions, if they are so approved, with the Information Management Division rather than in the Workers' Compensation Division. We work very closely with the Information Management Division. We are the largest user inside of Department of Consumer and Business Services of their services. As I mentioned, we have 54 projects backlogged with them. They have a total of 147 projects pending, so we make up more than a third of their project list. And even though we are requesting these positions inside of our budget, I thought it would be important to note that they would actually be reporting to the Information Management Division. And I'd be more than happy to answer questions on this option package if I can.
Any questions? You've answered everything. That'll be okay. Fine. Go ahead.
Okay. And the next part of the budget I wanted to touch on is our reduction option. And again, I'm on page 44 behind the Workers' Compensation Division tab. This package reduces our base budget expenditures to address the shortfalls we've been talking about in the workers' compensation premium assessment revenue. There's essentially three major steps that we're taking in this reduction package. The first is a reduction in our investigation function. The second is a reduction in our services and supplies, and the third is a reduction in our worksite modification program. There are five positions that are involved in this reduction. One is a management position and four are line positions. I'll touch on each individually. Reduced investigation function. We believe that we can better identify the complaints and patterns of conduct that warrant investigation that come into the Workers' Compensation Division. And by better identifying these complaints and patterns of conduct, we can more closely marry our investigations into our sanctions unit and our field audit unit. By moving the intake of investigation function into those units, basically, these changes will permit the same level of investigation that we're already doing. We will call on our program staff to become more involved in our investigation function, but essentially by restructuring, we eliminate the need for one management position and broaden the amount of supervision that some other managers need to do. And we also are able to eliminate the need for one investigator position, which is currently vacant anyways. The second area talking about is reduction in services and supplies. There's two major things that we're looking at doing here. One is that we've been archiving claim files in the archive division. Workers' compensation claims have what's known as a long tail on them, and what I mean by that is they really stay active for a very, very long period of time, longer than almost any other sort of liability claim. We've been maintaining the paper file, and simply we're proposing to begin microfilming critical documents rather than maintaining the paper file. A recent microfilming pilot, which we tried, demonstrated the feasibility of this approach, and this should significantly reduce our cost in terms of archiving and allow us to destroy superfluous physical files. The second area in terms of services and supply is to continue to expand our online data access, which will limit our printed publications. Currently, we send out paper to a long list of individuals who are interested in getting rules and notifications and bulletins from the division. And we're proposing that we make that, and frankly it is already available online and for people who want paper, that we charge a small fee for doing that. Unless there's a hardship where individuals are unable to afford that sort of thing, then we'd provide it for free of charge. But basically, in today's world, we think about 70% of the interested parties are going to be able to access our information over the internet. And then third area that we're suggesting reductions in is in our preferred worker program and the worksite modification aspect of that program. This is part of the reemployment assistance unit, which is currently staffed by 9 reemployment consultants.
Second, John, Representative Hayden.
If you reduce your cost by putting it online, why would you have to charge anyone a fee? What would you do with the extra money? If you reduce your cost, you save money. Why don't you have money to mail the paper?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the only fee that we might charge would be for those people who still require paper. So, for example, if we were sending out a rules bulletin or a new rules division to the industry, and there was a request by 2 or 3 insurance companies that they wanted hard copies of that, what we're doing is considering, while we have it online and allowing people to download that, which wouldn't cost us hardly anything. For those people who still want paper and paper copy, that we would charge a small subscription fee to offset the cost of still providing the hard copy to those who are requiring it.
You would then want your total budget reduced by the amount of savings that you generated by going online?
When we, excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, when we put this to, put pencil to paper on this, we thought that the fee would probably be required to help us get to the savings that, that we were looking for. But frankly, we don't expect to charge very much, or it would be more in the neighborhood of a nuisance charge than anything else. We're talking about a $15 subscription fee for a year. It's similar to what the insurance division already charges for their for sending out hard copy. It's not going to bring in much revenue for us, as much as we're trying to encourage the industry to go ahead and download offline. Excuse me, online.
You have a budget of $100 to mail the paperwork out, which you have now. And you say you can save $70 of that by going online. But you'd still have to pay $30 to mail it. You're ahead. You've got $70 extra there. You've got plenty of money in your budget from the $100 to mail the $35 of paper. What are you going to do with that money?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, this is a reduction package. They are proposing to reduce their budget in services and supplies by $200,000.
Thank you. That was the answer I wanted.
Thank you, Ms. Hall.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, sorry, I think I've got the Monday morning not too clear as yet.
We had too much good weather over the weekend.
The third area where we're looking to reduce is in the worksite modification program. We have 9 reemployment consultant positions. These positions consult with employers and workers to modify worksites, actually physically modify worksites to allow permanently disabled workers to return to work. The modifications for the work sites are paid for out of the Reemployment Assistance Program. We are proposing to reduce this program by 3 consultants, so there would only be six consultants left providing consultation to employers and workers for modification of work sites. In 1994,
Senator Dukes.
Yes, that's fine.
And I apologize to everyone. I was doing another meeting on Friday, and I'm struggling to hang in here this morning. But I have a question. The ACT money that you just mentioned that pays for these programs, that's federal funds?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no, it's not. These are out of the Workers' Benefit Fund. It's state-funded.
I'm struggling. What I've heard from the days when I was a little less blurry-eyed had to do with cutting programs to return injured workers to work, which is what I believe you were just talking about doing. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I do recall sometime last week I was talking about a package that was taking money from the Injured Workers Fund to fund some other things so we could keep things going. And I'm just...
Madam Chair and Senator Dukes, the money for the staffing that John's talking about cutting, the 3 people, is from the Premium Assessment Operating Account, which is the fund that we're having the shortfall in. Because we cut some of that staffing, there'll also be a cut in the Workers' Benefit Fund. But as I think John can explain, we're leaving 2/3 of that program in place, and we think that we can probably reach a similar level of production in terms of assisting injured workers in this particular program by just working smarter and rearranging the way we do things. So this cut is directly addressing that operating account that has a shortfall in it. And you're right, we are still transferring money from the other fund into this fund. That's the other piece of how we're addressing the shortfall. But it is directly generated by the shortfall in the assessment operating account. And again, I'll turn it back to John to explain how that program will continue, and we will continue to put injured workers back to work.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, we will not be able to provide the same level of service that we have been providing. Cutting these three positions, there will be an impact. There has been a reduction in workload, and I'll touch on that. But there is going to be some impact in terms of the services that we provide. We are hoping through some restructuring of how we do the work to minimize that impact. In 1994, we entered into 514 worksite modification contracts. In the year 2000, that was reduced to 341 worksite modification contracts. The reduction mirrors the falling number of disabling claims that we have in the workers' compensation system. There are less disabled workers in the system today than there were before. So there is some workload reduction that's going on inside the system. But elimination of three of these reemployment consultant positions will have some impact, certainly when there are periods of high demand in the system. And these the demand for these services ebbs and flows. It's difficult to predict when people are going to be requesting assistance with modification of work sites. Certainly when there's going to be periods of high demand, there's going to be difficulties to meet high demand. On the other hand, there is nothing that prevents prevents the private sector from stepping in and providing these services. We can subsidize private counselors, insurance company representatives, private rehabilitation counselors to go in and provide these services. And in the fact, we have done that in the past.
And Jonathan,
thank you, Madam Chair. You may have said this, and I didn't get it. How do you prioritize who would get a subsidy, whether or not the company came to you directly and you sent your own people, or whether or not you provided a subsidization for a private counselor to go to a work site?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, there is a eligibility process that the first of all, the worker has to go through. We have to determine whether or not the worker is going to be eligible for the services. And the basic determiner on that is whether or not the worker has a permanent disability as a result of their industrial injury or occupational disease. Then secondly, if the we need to determine whether or not the job is going to be physically appropriate for the worker, and even sometimes with modification of the work site, that can be a problem. One of the things that we don't want to do is get into a situation where we've provided a lot of assistance and frankly expended a lot of funds to place a worker into a situation where the job is not going to be physically appropriate. So we try to make sure as best we can through working with the employer and working with the physician and working with the worker that we're going to be able to put the worker in a position where they're going to be able to work safely. Then once we determine that the worker is eligible and we have a pretty good idea of working with the physician of what the worker's physical capacities are and what the worker can and can't do, working with the employer, it's really the judgment of the consultant involved as to whether or not this job is going to be, as proposed, to be modified, whether or not the job's going to be appropriate. And any employer is eligible to take advantage of this program. A lot of the employers that do take advantage of this program are the employer at injury. They have a worker who is severely disabled, and there are other reemployment assistance programs that they may or may not take advantage of, but sometimes we do provide worksite modification funding for the employer at injury. Sometimes it's a new employer where the worker has gone out and found a new employer that is interested in hiring them, but there's a modification required. Sometimes the modifications are very simple and straightforward. On the other hand, they can be very complicated. We do have a limit of $25,000, where we do not go beyond that limit in terms of modification of the work site unless the worker has an exceptional disability. And what that means is the loss of use of two or more limbs. And I've gone out on a couple of modification sites where workers have been in wheelchairs, and we've substantially modified the work setting to allow the worker to go back to work. And well over $25,000 sometimes is required to do that.
At that point, is there employer participation, or does it solely rest with your judgment and your check?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, it requires employer participation, and it requires the department to okay it as well, and it requires the worker to activate the services. One thing about the Preferred Worker Program, which this is a part of, it is a worker-activated program. The worker has to decide they're going to give their consent first. And once the worker consents, then as long as the employer and the department and the physician can all work together as a team, it usually works.
Do you have any insights as to the length the worker stays in the positions once you've modified the job site in order to accommodate them? Do they stay for a lifetime, or for a year, or what's the term in this situation?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, it varies greatly. We have done a couple of follow-up studies, but they've been very limited in scope in terms of, frankly, just checking in the realm of 90 days afterwards to make sure that workers were still on the job site. We did some studies also that were aimed at looking at wage replacement for the worker. How well did they do in terms of recouping their wage as compared to wage at injury, and frankly, that the workers did very well on that. We were surprised at how well that worked, but we've only taken very limited looks in terms of how long that workers stay on the job. And my personal experience and having been in this field for a long time, it varies greatly. Some workers stay just a short time. The majority of workers stay quite a while, and as I was saying, it's very common for the worker and the employer at injury to enter into this program. And so a lot of workers are going back to work with their employer at injury. They've never left work, basically. What we are proposing here is the elimination of three reemployment consultant positions. And as I mentioned, this is certainly going to have an effect in terms of handling workload at times. And I think what we're going to see is probably some delay in getting out to employers. Certainly our outreach activities will be reduced. And what I mean by that is we put on a lot of educational efforts to try to advise employers that this program is available. And frankly, we're just going to have to reduce those sorts of outreach activities with less staff. We also have six reemployment specialists that basically do the intake of people into the system, and they also provide the other services. Worksite modification is only one of several services that are available through the Reemployment Assistance Program. These folks will probably have to take up some of the slack and become more involved in some of the triaging of the worksite modifications. Our best estimate in terms of workload is that we will go from doing each consultant doing approximately 40 worksite modifications a year to probably 60 worksite modifications a year. We think we can do that. We don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility for our staff to effectively handle at all. But in all honesty, there's probably going to be some slowdown in responsiveness because of reducing in this area.
Would you conjecture, and I'm sure you haven't studied it closely, but would you conjecture that part of the reduction in workload would be to the turn down in the wood products industry with several hundred mills closing, and those are got to be high-risk jobs that aren't there anymore, or they've moved out of country, out of state, so the risk has gone with them. So you've lost 10 or 20,000 high-risk workers, and it would seem like you would need less employees to do the things they do because they're not there anymore.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that's possible. However, along with the less employment in the wood products industry, we have seen a lot more employment over the last decade in construction, and that's a high hazard industry as well. So it's probably, though, in terms of a worksite modification program, I would imagine that it's somewhat more likely that mills are going to use that sort of program than construction would. And the reason I say that is because you've got, in mills, you've got people who are working around machinery and are usually in settings where modification of a work site is more possible than in a mobile setting. So that's very possible. I believe the biggest factor, however, is just that we have less disabling claims today than we did 10 years ago, substantially less disabling claims.
I would just conjecture that's because of the shift into the service industry and high tech, which is a much lower risk than some of the manual labor that we have done in years past.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I wouldn't argue with that. Our industry is definitely changing. That's all for my presentation, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I'll ask all the questions we want, so thank you very much, John. And we'll take a 5-minute break and then we'll continue.